smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
One of the first things we can do as responsible pet owners is to adopt a rescue animal. There are far too many dogs in need of good homes, and with a lot of love and proper training, most of these dogs will make wonderful companions. And yet, often, rescue dogs arrive with baggage. It's our job to help them move beyond negative behaviors to lead happy, stress-free lives. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and welcome to the Good Dog Podcast, where today's focus is on addressing aggression in dogs. Both dog-on-dog aggression and aggression toward people, or certain types of people. My guest is Kate Knight of Clear Signals Dog Training, serving both sides of the leash. Welcome, Kate. I love that tagline there.
Thank you very much.
So is aggression often, or maybe even always, a reaction to fear?
No. Aggression is a quality that dogs simply have to have in order to have evolved. A dog without aggression wouldn't have been in the genetic mix. It wouldn't have gotten any food. It's really just a natural part of being a dog. We have problems with it when it turns into fear, or when the dog simply likes to have aggression. There are dogs that just simply are aggressive, really for fun, I think. But mostly it's fear aggression, and we can work very well to, if not train it out, ameliorate it.
So most dogs that have aggression just control it, is that it, when they're domestic animals?
Yeah, sure, because they don't have to fight for their food. You know, they don't have to fight for their space. So there's not much need for aggression.
So when you say that some dogs are aggressive for fun, what do you mean? They've just been allowed to do that and therefore they continue?
Well, what I mean is there are dogs that have been bred to fight. And so their nature is to fight. That's their genetic strain.
Certain breeds?
It's not necessarily a breed. It can be. It happens to coalesce around breeds, but it's really just about a genetic strain of a dog that is a dog that likes to fight. That's what I call a fun fight. The dog likes to fight. But most dogs, certainly in the pet realm, we're really talking about a dog that's scared and doesn't really know what else to do.
So some dogs who are afraid will cower, will hide in the corner. Others will just, like mine, when she's afraid, will just bare her teeth. She won't actually do anything, but she tries to look scary.
Mm-hmm.
She's 15 pounds, so no one quite takes her too seriously, but she makes a valiant effort.
Yes.
What about that? Why is it that some dogs behave certain ways from their fear and others will actually try to attack?
Well, in my opinion about that, dogs just simply have personalities. And so just like a shy wallflower, a human will try to avoid confrontation, turn away, you know, sit in a corner. Others will just try to defend themselves right away. It can still be both out of fear, but it looks very different. But another point about that is that sometimes when we see a dog that we think is, I use the word reactive rather than aggressive, when we see a dog is reactive, it's in part because we haven't seen all those little subtle signals leading up to that big thing that we saw. Like you see the side of a growl or a snarl or something. But there may be some other signals that you might not notice, like the dog might freeze, for instance, or the dog might very gently lower its neck a little bit, or it might turn its head a little bit away from whatever's bothering it. These are all part of what's called a threat signature. And what you need to do is know your own dog's threat signature. Because if you know it, sometimes it's not as surprising.
So if you're walking your dog, and mm-hmm. your dog sees another dog and for whatever reason gets frightened and begins to exhibit some of these reactive behaviors, mm-hmm. what should one do?
Well, if you know that that's what your dog does, then you need to have a session with the behaviorist and get some coaching. But the essence of it, if it's just as you say, like let's say, this stuff's all very specific. So let's say your dog gets upset when it sees another dog across the street and all the way down to the corner, let's say half a block. That would be pretty highly reactive. What you want to do is always have treats on you. Walk your dog when your dog is hungry. And at the moment as you see your dog, you're going to learn your dog's signals better. So the moment you see your dog noticing that other dog is in the area, you give your dog a treat.
Point being, why do you do that?
You do that because you're trying to change the equation in the dog's mind. You're changing it from there's a scary dog, I need to defend myself, to there's a scary dog, that means I get food.
Much more positive.
Much more positive. It's really very classic counter conditioning, and it's called counter conditioning because the original conditioning is, oh, there's a scary dog, I better defend myself. The counter conditioning is, oh, there's a scary dog, that means I'm going to get that great treat that I only get when there's a scary dog here.
Beyond that, and that sounds like a very good idea, what if your dog only reacts with fear and then reactively when a dog is really close in his or her proximity?
Well, that's better because you don't have to start training from across the street and down the way. If a dog only reacts within 10 feet away, then that's your training zone. That's very easy to control. So that if your dog's, and maybe the dog only reacts when the dog is on a leash and coming towards you. Maybe the dog doesn't react when the dog's beside you. Maybe the dog doesn't react when the dog's behind you. These are all the things you tease out, and you really work the item that the dog really is responding to. So let's just say the dog is responding when a dog and owner with the dog on leash comes towards you at a fairly rapid clip from about 10 feet away. Well, you would have seen that person coming because you're going to be alert and you're going to be careful when you go around corners. So all you would do is step out to the street or step around a car or step down into a driveway and use like a hedge to kind of block the visuals and give your dog treats as the other dog passes. Because it's the same thing. Scary dog equals, oh, now I get those great treats.
So you don't make an attempt to go over and make nice and say, no. Oh, this is a fine dog. No, no need.
This isn't about that. This is when a dog is emotional, when a dog's upset, all you're doing is this very simple thing of substituting something good for something scary. And you do it before the dog gets terribly scared because the dog won't take the food if you let it go too long. Okay? So you have to be really alert and catch it there. But this isn't about, oh, there's a scary dog, I want you to sit down nicely, I'll give you a treat if you sit. It's not about that. It's about, here's the scary dog, oh, great treat. You know, it sounds funny. We as people, we like our dogs to have to do something more for that, but that's another kind of conditioning. That's called operant conditioning. And once the dog gets like halfway over the fear, you can start adding in that. You can have a scary dog coming and ask your dog to do tricks, jump in the air, spin, whatever you want, and give treats then. But to get it started, you're really, really, really just saying, I'm changing this equation. Scary dog equals great treat. And when you know it's working is when the dog sees a scary dog and swings his head to you because he knows, ah, great, there's that scary dog. Now I get my treat.
Fabulous. I love it. It's a great tip. I'm going to implement it right away with Lulu.
It works. It really, really works.
That's a great one, Kate. A good dog listener wrote in about her dog who is afraid of strange men, and I suspect she means men that the dog hasn't yet met, right? Not strange in the sense of strange to her.
Oh, weird.
Not weird men.
Weird. Just strangers.
Strangers, right. Yes. So she's assuming that this is an adopted dog, and she's assuming mm-hmm. that the dog was probably at one point abused by men.
Mm-hmm.
Fair assumption?
No, you don't have to assume that. You can assume, this can happen so many different ways. One way is that the dog was minding its own business, maybe it was asleep, and somebody with a big shoe or a big boot came across the room and accidentally stepped on that dog's tail. That could be enough, if it's the right time in the dog's development, to say, I'm really afraid of those big boots. Those big boots tend to come with people who do construction work, delivery people. Those people still tend to be men. It can then generalize to strange men. You see what I mean? It could have been innocent. It could have been an innocent accident.
And so one little incident like that can imprint on a dog's psyche, and then boom, that's it. They make that association and have that fear forever.
And that fear can grow. It can chain onto other things that are connected with those boots. It's not like any time in the dog's life. There's a few very impressionable times. The first time is about 8 weeks old. Unfortunately, if you're buying a dog, that's the time that dogs tend to get put in boxes and shipped, put in crates and shipped.
Right.
Very, very scary. So all sorts of scare imprints happen during that trip. It's a bad thing to do, in my opinion, because you might not, the dog that gets put on the plane might be not the dog that you get off of the plane.
Sure. But how do you then address those kinds of incidents that occurred when a dog was that age and did create that sort of an imprint? How do you address that later in the dog's life?
What you have to do is you have to tease out all the situations that cause that. And so, for instance, if I met the dog and was at the house, I might bring a pair of big shoes. And I might, if the dog wasn't a dog that was, that where they told me the dog actually attacked people, that it was just really scared and turned away and that, then I might put on those big shoes and see how the dog reacted. And then I might actually walk around the house with those big shoes. And if nothing happens, I might walk around the house making heavier footprints. And then I might walk towards the dog. Right? I'm trying to see exactly what it is that triggers the dog. Once I can figure out what really triggers the dog, and it might just be men in general, then what you do is you start introducing a strange man, a very gentle, quiet, strange man, into your home who's willing to do this. You might want to muzzle the dog depending on what the dog's danger level is, and have that man just sitting at the end of the couch, for instance. As the man sits there, he throws treats across the room. You make sure the dog's really hungry. And again, this is really great treats you're throwing. And what you're again, it's the same process. You're trying to associate now scary men with really great food.
It's fascinating.
That's it. You're just rewiring the dog's brain.
Can you share any success stories of dogs you've worked with who've been aggressive?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I specialize in it. It works very, very well. And with dog aggression, I happen to have 3 very mild-mannered, very large dogs. And so I work with my dogs with the dogs who are scared. And I can control the distances, put my dogs different places, you know, have their backs to the other dogs, have them in a down position. So I can really tease out what actually is upsetting the other dog.
Are there any situations where you've helped someone whose dog was aggressive toward humans or a particular subset of humans?
It's harder because there's more danger. The only time that I've done it has been when dogs have just been fierce snappers, right? Where they have snapped at particularly a child and gotten a piece of skin from the snapping, not necessarily like they wanted to really hurt the child. They just wanted that child to go away. So actually I've done that a few times. And I do it in the same way. You have to associate scary children with great treats, but you have to be much more careful because it's with people.
And is this the sort of thing, like with so many dog training ideas, where you have to really be consistent and do it over a long period of time?
Yes, and with this kind of conditioning, see, it takes time because first you have to tease out what's really going on with the dog. Because a lot of times it's not what you see on first look, right? So that's where behaviors comes in, to really take that kind of practice look about what's really going on. And then you very systematically have to tease out each strand and treat that strand. And then the dog calms down on that strand, builds more confidence. So the next strand goes easier, builds more confidence. The next one goes faster. And pretty soon you have a very wonderful dog.
You know, as you were talking about the imprinting when pups are so little, I thought of something that I've often wondered about with our dog, Lulu. When she was little, and I'm thinking 7 or 8 weeks old, we had just gotten her, and she was running towards something. I can't even remember what it was, but it was something that could have been dangerous. My husband reached down to kind of scoop her up, and she screamed. And it turned out, I mean, we took her to the vet, and it turned out a little bone in her leg had broken. So she had a little cast on. And now she's 3 years old, and when you go to lift her, she clearly is terrified. Is that
right.
That's probably why, right?
That's it. And you can work that.
How do you do that?
Well, I wouldn't work it with your husband. Does the dog act this way with you?
Yeah, she just, if you go to lift her, she kind of cowers and runs off. It's only when you go to try to scoop her up, though. So that's why I've associated. I figured as you were talking, that must be why.
Must be it. If the dog's on the floor and you're standing and you're lowering your hand as if you were going to scratch the dog's chest, do you get any reaction?
Usually she'll dart off. Yeah.
Okay. So she's hand shy. That's what that's called.
Okay.
She's hand shy. And so the way you treat hand shyness is I would put your dog's bowl away. I wouldn't feed your dog out of a bowl for the next 3 months. And all food would come from that scary hand.
Interesting.
And I would start on the floor because probably, I think with little dogs, that hand coming down is extra scary. So I would start at whatever level. I would start on the floor with your dog. And I would hand feed every tiny little kibble for breakfast and for dinner.
Okay.
And after you were able to do that from a standing position with your hand coming down and your dog doing whatever your dog wants to do, sit or lay or stand, then I would ask your husband to do it, but he would again have to start on the floor and then work his way up to sitting and then work his way up to standing.
If she's sitting on a chair or a couch and you go over to her very quietly and gently, it's fine. But you're right. It's the hand. That's the issue.
And it's the hand on the floor because that's what she got picked up from.
Yep.
You see how it is? You have to tease out that situation and train that situation.
They, you know, they don't think like we do, or we don't think like they do. So this is tricky.
Yeah. One of the things to remember about the way dogs are in their world is this is really key. One is, humans generalize. That's how we organize our world. We're in something new and we say, oh, okay, that train station is like the one I knew over there. This schedule's like this one. Okay, I can do this. Dogs go into a situation, what they're about is what's different, because they're always about, their genetics are always about what's different here, what can I eat? So what moved, what can I eat? What ran, what can I eat? Okay, that's it, right? It's one-offs. Their whole world is organized in one-offs. We always want them to be generalists. They're not. They're one-offs. So when we teach a dog, it gets them in a lot of trouble with us because we try to teach a dog, let's say, to sit, something easy, right? Then but company comes over, and then we tell the dog to sit, and the dog doesn't sit. And so the, what the human says is, that dog's stubborn. That dog just won't listen to me. What's the real truth is that picture is entirely different to that dog. You being alone in your house in a standing position asking the dog to sit with some food nearby is not at all the same request to a dog if a bunch of people are there, you don't have food, and you're walking around.
Kate, thanks so much for joining us on the Good Dog Podcast today.
It was wonderful. Thank you for having me.